Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're continuing our conversation on ways to kill gospel culture. And today, we're talking about jealousy and envy.
Dusty, good to have you back in the studio.
Yeah.
That was the audience clapping for you.
Big audience.
Hey, jealousy and envy are killers of a gospel culture. And you'll notice all the things we've been talking about are things that tend to lie just below the surface of our souls and lives. They tend to be more subtle, more attitudes and dispositions of the heart. Oftentimes they're hard to identify. We're self-conscious about them. I know I shouldn't be an envious or jealous person, and so it's not going to come out on the surface. It's kind of going to lie underneath, and so we want to talk about that and how that kills a gospel culture, and then how it is that the gospel begins to free us from jealousy and envy, and what the opposite of that would be, what the virtues that we would cultivate in contradiction to that would be. The verse, the passage that I want to start in, the one that came to mind as I was praying through this topic is James chapter 3, where the Apostle James says this: "Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." So guys, it's interesting. I noticed a couple things about this. Number one, the phrase bitter jealousy and selfish ambition is repeated twice. It's in verse 14 and verse 16. And so there's a focus on those things. And then it's obvious that the opposite of that, he's contrasting here the wisdom from below and the wisdom from above. And so he seems to say bitterness, jealousy, selfish ambition is not a characteristic of wisdom, of godly wisdom. And so there's some connection between wisdom, receiving the wisdom from above, the wisdom that God gives us in his truth, in his word, and that's the opposite, or that will move us away from jealousy and selfish ambition. And even I love James 3:17, because it's a pretty good description of gospel community, of a gospel culture, right? Pure. The wisdom that comes from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And that's just a great, I mean, if every gospel community was marked by those virtues, that would be a pretty beautiful, healthy, God-honoring thing. And so there's certainly some biblical material here for us to use just as raw material in this conversation to help us understand why jealousy, why envy works against a gospel culture. Any thoughts just as we jump into that text?
It appears that if you're jealous, if your ambition is selfish, you're really focused on yourself. And what James paints in verse 17, wisdom from above is pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. It's very outward focused. It has little to do about me, but towards other people.
Yeah. It's interesting, this phrase that's translated selfish ambition is the word erythea in Greek, which is a feeling of resentfulness based on jealousy. So sometimes we hear ambition and we think of selfish ambition as like, you know, I want to do well, I want to achieve something. But in this case, it's specifically connected to jealousy, and it's a resentfulness of others as them succeeding is getting in the way of me succeeding, or that it's specifically an ambition that's rooted in a resentfulness toward another and not wanting them to experience a blessing.
The thing that sticks out to me in that passage with a first glance or a first read is verse 18, actually, the very end: a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And we're talking about jealousy and envy, and I think the opposite of that is a great soul-satisfied contentment which brings about peace. And so, and then that actually reminds me of Galatians 5, where the deeds of the flesh are evident, and Paul lists jealousy and envy. He actually does it as two separate fruits that are obvious, he's basically saying. And then he lists the fruit of the Spirit as being, or as bringing about peace. And so I think it's interesting to juxtapose those, envy and jealousy bringing about what those things do. But the opposite of that would be a deep, settled contentment and therefore peace.
That's good. We're going to get right back to that in a few minutes. Let's first of all build out, because again, I said a few weeks ago when we were talking about gossip, I've never heard anybody confess the sin of gossip. This is one of those things, right? I rarely hear anyone go, man, I'm just really envious of you, Dusty, or your gifts, or, you know, Mike, I'm really jealous of what you have that I don't have. And so this is one of those things that I think we realize it's present in us in some way, but it's so subtle and it's so down deep. So let's talk a little bit about what does it look like when there is envy and jealousy? How does it tend to manifest itself? And even if it, even if it doesn't manifest itself, how does it tend to feel down inside when we're actually sort of taking stock of our hearts? What things can we begin to recognize in ourselves that are characteristics or markers of jealousy, envy?
I remember seeing guys that were a little bit ahead of me in life, whether it was marriage or ministry, and just really feeling like I wanted what they had. And when I didn't get what they had, that I was being gypped somehow. And it really made me resentful towards God, but also resentful towards that person because I felt like he didn't deserve what he was getting. Mm. I deserved better.
I think it's a very subtle sin that we don't even realize is present in us until we start distancing ourselves from those kinds of people or really trying to project our life into their life. And I think this happens in gospel communities throughout our church, and I think it just happens every day, where we see people, we want our life to look like that, or we want our kids to do that, or we want to have that job. And it's very subtle. So then what we tend to do is distance ourselves. And I think social media is a killer here. In fact, just for an example, this is probably over a year ago, but I was in a conversation with a guy, and he had sought me out, and he said to me, he goes, I just look at your life like on Instagram, and I just want my life to look like that, which I thought was like he was kind of honoring me in that, but he was also comparing himself, to which I responded right away, well, hey, let's be clear, I'm only putting good stuff on Instagram, right? Right? Like,
my life, it's a highly edited like version that. Of your life.
Yeah, it's only the smiles and only the good stuff. It's not the... You know, I don't put my dirty dishes on Instagram, right? So, but I think we can tend to do that, and so I think social media is a killer there too.
So it's interesting because you're bringing up the fact that envy and jealousy are essentially competitive and comparative. Mm. That I can only be jealous of someone if I'm comparing myself to them, either what I have or what I don't have, and so there's this inherent comparison that is present always in envy and jealousy, and it's not just comparison of what other people have in terms of possessions or even their life. Sometimes in Christian community, it's comparison of their gifts or even their fruitfulness, mm-hmm. what God's doing through them, the ways that they have talents or aptitudes or gifts that I don't have. Those things can even be raw material for jealousy and envy. Carl Richardson, in the New American Commentary on this passage in James, says, "Envy focuses inordinately on another person's possessions and relationships. It desires to imitate and surpass another." And so it's this focus on what they have that I don't have and a desire to be better than or to surpass or to better them in some way. So let's talk about social media, because what I get is a feed of everybody else that I've decided to follow or be in a social networking relationship with, constantly informing me of opportunities to compare myself with them or, you know, to look at what they have. I mean, if I want, I just open up my social media and there is all kinds of opportunity to be comparing myself.
Yeah, and the only thing you're putting on, like we said earlier, the only thing you're putting on that feed, your particular feed, is stuff you enjoy, where you feel like you actually have a photo to contribute, you actually have a quote to contribute, you actually have something to say here that's that everybody else needs to know about, and therefore people are taking that in. And so if you aren't comfortable in your own skin, if you're not at peace in your soul, and you don't have a deep contentment for where God has given you, where God has placed you and who he has made you, then you're automatically now comparing yourself through envy and through jealousy to that person or to that circumstance, which reminded me that there's this book called Christ in the Chaos, and the subtitle is How the Gospel Changes Motherhood. And I think this is very important. This topic is very important for women. Although envy and jealousy is a universal sin, I think it manifests itself in women in ways that are different than men. But she says this: by the end of an exhausting week, I felt crushed by my inability to be the kind of mother I thought I should be. At one point, I even voiced to my children that a particular friend, we'll call her Carrie, she says, was a much better mother. I felt ill-equipped for the difficult job of mothering, and I thought I could never match the excellence I thought I saw in Carrie and her family. And so the reason I'm bringing that up is because I think there's a deep comparison when it comes to parenting. There's deep comparison when it comes to mothering, and women can take that social media in. Actually, is their primary way of, it's their primary conduit now of envy and jealousy, I think, in our day. And so we have to check that.
It's interesting that quote even brings to bear the fact that it might be my own expectations of what I should be that can create the ground for envy. Because if I see someone else's life and I think, I'm not as good. I ought to be better than I am at that, right? To use that example, I'm not even a good mom compared to that person, right? That person actually might be a terrible mom,
right?
But I have some expectation that I'm not meeting up to in myself, and so there seems to be this relentless insecurity at the core of every one of us that knows that we're not measuring up in some way, and so the idea that someone else is, whether that is true or whether it's just perceived, is fertile breeding ground for jealousy.
Yeah, and she goes on after that to say, she's the better mom, and I hate her for it.
Yeah.
And so actually they're friends, right? She would never say this to her friend, but she's saying, in my heart of hearts, through my comparison and through my jealousy and through my envy of that situation, I'm actually hating her for it, which reminds me of James, the passage you opened up with, Bob. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice, because jealousy and envy lead to something dark and demonic, which is why we have to talk about it, because it's wrecking our communities if we don't address it.
Yeah. That's good. It's interesting to think about the word disorder as a symptomatic communal result of envy and jealousy, right? It says where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder. There will be sort of a disorganization. And so if you think about a gospel culture, disorder is not something you want there. Right, the idea of there being chaos and there being sort of things being discombobulated and disconnected. The Greek word there is actually a word that's connected to rebellion or revolt. And so it's interesting to think that if there's envy in my heart, if there's jealousy in my heart, there's something in me that actually wants to be rebellious or you know, as opposed to working for the good of the community I'm a part of. It's inherently, because it's inherently competitive, it's also inherently rebellious. And so rather than contributing to a healthy culture, I'll set myself in opposition to that culture by the fact that I am jealous of someone or my jealousy is manifesting itself in that community. And so James contrasts that with this great phrase in verse 13, the meekness of wisdom. And I think that's a wonderful way to think about what the disposition I should be pursuing, the virtue I want to cultivate, the thing I want to be after, is the meekness of wisdom. That is, the wisdom of God has informed me, helped me see my envy and jealousy, and informed me of a better way. And what I'm cultivating is meekness. It's humility. It's lack of self-concern. It's gentleness. It's the opposite of a comparative and competitive spirit.
It's also the opposite of projecting something I wish I was, right? It's to be meek and to be humble is to be exactly who you are in the moment all the time, right? I mean, there's a bunch of definitions for humility, but in particular to this passage, that's what it kind of reminds me of, going off of what you're saying, which is interesting too, because I think in our communities, we tend to posture who we wish we were, who we want to be, and then that can bring disorder to the actual community that we're in, because I am now not allowing you to see who I really am, because I'm trying to be this person. I'm trying to project this person. And really, that's out of a heart of jealousy and envy in situations and circumstances and in people that I see. And so I'm trying to be somebody I'm not. And to be meek in wisdom is to be comfortable in my own skin, to be who I am, and therefore enter into community holistically.
Yeah, there's some kind of fear in us that says, if the people in this community knew me like I really am, they probably wouldn't embrace me or like me. And so I need to posture and I need to put forward a better version of me. I need to be the me that I think I am on social media. We're doing the same thing on social media that we actually do in real community, which is to put forward a version of ourselves and say, here's what I'm really like, and to hold back the parts of ourselves that are unseemly, that are less sanctified, that are less desirable. And all we're doing there is creating a false version of community. And so it's interesting to think about it. If you ask, how does the gospel change a community of people? What the gospel frees us to do is to allow ourselves to be known by others and to put the real us out there. And in the same way, to embrace the real others, so that you don't need to be the projected version of you, but I'm free to embrace the real you, messiness included, brokenness included, unsightly and unseemly parts of you included, in a community where, if you think about this, think about your job, think about going to a job interview, think about trying out for an athletic team, think about everything you've ever had to do where you had to meet a standard. Every place else in life, we're expected to put forth a desirable version of ourselves. And so if in gospel communities, if the church can create communities where people can actually be who they are, and where I don't have to posture anymore, I don't have to put forward a preferable version of myself, but I can just be me, that's radical. And when people enter a community where it's okay to be who I really am, and where the real me is welcomed and loved, that's dramatically countercultural. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we're after when we talk about gospel culture, is a church and a set of sub-communities within that church where it's okay to be who you are, where the real you is embraced, not some fake version of you.
While you're talking, I'm reminded of Ray Ortland's book on the gospel, The Little Green Book, as we affectionately call it here, where really what you're saying there is, if you have the gospel in a community or in your church and you have some safety, his equation is gospel plus safety plus time. If you got some safety and then you have some time, which means we don't have to microwave who you need to be, basically is how I interpret that.
That's good.
Then that is why the church and your gospel community and the people that you do life with, that should be significantly different than everything else you do. Because at work, you do need to perform. And on your athletic team, you do need to show up. And you do need to be early for practice. And you do need to work hard. In your gospel community, you're free to be exactly who you are. So let's talk about how this manifests itself in weird ways. I'm particularly thinking of, if you're hosting a gospel community, let's say you're in a weekly rhythm. You know, at Quorum Day, we do this often, right? So let's say you're in a weekly rhythm of hosting a gospel community. If your house is always clean, always picked up, your storage room is ridiculously clean, then that sounds exhausting to me. Maybe you're just crazy organized and neat, and I tend to be this way, but actually our storage room is a mess, and our whole gospel community knows it, you know, because they go in there. So they're like, yeah, our dog's in there. We got an extra fridge in there, you know, stuff like first world problems. But let's talk about what this can bring freedom-wise, Bob. Let's talk about this a little bit when it comes to kids and parenting in our gospel communities.
Yeah. Well, if I'm freed from comparison, it allows me to enter into a gospel community as I am and embrace other people as they are. And so, again, James 3:17, the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason. I love that idea of being open to reason and an inherent gentleness that says, man, I want to enter in low. I want to enter in humble. I'm here to be who I am and embrace these people as they are. It's okay to not be okay. It's also okay to identify where I need to hear reason, where maybe my life and my practices are out of line with godly wisdom. And so there's room for me to grow. I don't have to be defensive, posturing, insecure, jealous of what someone else has, and therefore hiding what I don't have, right? The connection to jealousy is that if I'm jealous of what you have, I'm also prone to hide whatever I feel like in me doesn't measure up to
that. Yeah, because it feels deficient.
Right. So parenting is a great example, right? Like, so if your kids are better behaved than mine, I'm prone to be ashamed of my kids' behavior and not want to bring them or want to like have a conversation in the car with them before we get there. Like, you kids all better behave, you know, because it's about performing. It's about measuring up. It's about me meeting the standard that I think exists in my head because I'm jealous of what I don't have or somebody else's kids. And so the gospel just tears all that down and says, man, it's, you're free to come and enter in like you are and be full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere, open to reason, gentle, peaceable. Those are all great descriptions of the disposition that is present, that's the opposite of envy and jealousy.
Now, it's quite possible that jealousy and envy aren't, you know, your main tendencies or your main sins. And to that, I just want to say, hey, be cautious because they will rear their heads. It's always interesting when envy and jealousy rear their head in my life because I don't see them as predominant or dominant sins that really kind of take me out of the knees. But, I mean, if I'm being completely honest, you know, I recently bought a 1989 Ford van because that's what my family could afford. But the van I really want is a Nissan NV 3500. And so every time I see one on the road, I'm like, dang, that's a nice van.
It's called a Nissan NV?
Nissan.
NV.
NV. Oh, you like that? I see what you did
weird.
There.
Whoa.
NV, as in probably the letter N, NV, and then 3500. But, I mean, those things start at like 38 grand, right? I'm in a different tax bracket, if you know what I'm saying. So... but anyway, these things will rear their head and then that will breed discontentment in where you're currently at. But it is quite possible that these are your dominant sins. And to that, we all just need the gospel. And so when I think about the gospel, the phrase that comes to mind that Jesus uttered from the cross was, "It is finished." And he did this before you became envious and jealous. And that creates great rest. So... if you struggle with envy and jealousy, then you're constantly on. I mean, I'm spitballing here, but I'm guessing that you're constantly comparing. You're constantly on, as in you're wondering if you're measuring up. But I think the gospel creates great rest, right?
And the gospel, being free from envy and jealousy through the gospel, frees me to appreciate the gifts, the talents, the skills of others in a way that's not falsely humble. Right, that just says, man, this person has gifts I don't have, and I'm thankful for that. So we were joking on the way back from Dallas. We were just in Dallas, Dusty and I, and we sat and listened to Matt Chandler preach. I'm like, I hate listening to that guy because he's so dang good, man. He's such an amazing communicator. I just think, man, I'm not half as funny as this guy. Like, I'm incredibly boring compared to this guy, if I'm honest. And yet, what I think the gospel's freed me to do is to say, yep, and I love that guy, man. I'm so glad he's on our team. I can't be him, and I don't want to try to be him. You know, I want to be who I am. I have a whole different style of communication. I don't want to suck. I don't want to make excuses for like, well, I'm just going to, you know, do my thing over here. I want to grow. I want to get better. I want to learn from people who have skills and gifts in that area. But I want to be able to appreciate and enjoy and say, man, I'm thankful for that guy. And I don't want to walk away from something like that, fighting envy and jealousy in my heart and saying, oh man, do I measure up to that guy's standard? Or, you know, does Dusty think I'm as funny as him? And, you know, are my sermons received in the same way? That's chaos, you know, and that quickly breeds unhealthy stuff. And so the Lord's graciously delivered me from some of that. I think that was certainly true in my heart, man, when I was a young leader, just comparing myself to other people and being like, man, am I as good as that guy? Do I have what that guy has? How do I be more like him? And part of what the gospel has done is to free me to say, man, I'm not that guy. And so I'm not going to try to be, you know, I'm going to learn what I can, and I'm going to grow, and I'm going to cultivate relationships that help me get better in certain areas, but I'm also going to be comfortable in my own skin, to use your words, Dusty.
Guys, I heard John Piper say once, somebody asked him, what's the biggest struggle in his faith? And he said, the slowness of my sanctification, which is bizarre to hear him say, mm-hmm. because you see him as an old, wise man, close to God, devoted to God, and he struggles with that. And so I've had conversations with guys who said, I'm not as far along in my faith as I see myself wanting to be. And so that doesn't really stir up resentment against one another as a community, but that stirs up resentment towards God.
Mm-hmm.
How do we encourage guys and gals in our church and our communities towards, you know, away from that, away from resentment towards God for where God has them and their growth.
That's a brilliant insight.
Yeah, that's deep. Because now you just made it vertical. We've been talking horizontal.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
A thought that I have there, Mike, is just to say I don't want to – well, two things. One, I need to live the script that God's written for me, and so I need to embrace the slowness of my sanctification if that's God's providence for me. I also need to not make excuses if I'm lazy. You know, like the challenge of this conversation is that some people are stuck because they're just not making use of the means of grace. You know, they're lazy in their own disciplines, and that they are where they are for a reason. And so I don't want to be mad at God as a way of avoiding my need to change or to apply myself in different ways. But man, it's really true that God has a different script for everyone's life. And if I have some idealized version of me that I'm comparing myself to and saying, well, I thought I'd be here, but really I'm here. And so I'm discontent, I'm angry, and I'm frustrated. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me at the end of this passage, James uses the language of sowing and reaping. He says, a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And so it's clear in Scripture, not just here, but other places, that you know, sowing and reaping never happen in the same day, right? I got to sow seeds. I got to be patient and take time and let the Lord grow those seeds into a harvest. And I don't get to demand that God bring that harvest in my ways, on my timetable. I need to cultivate a spirit of humility that says, man, I trust the Lord to bring that harvest when and how he brings it. I'm just going to stay on my knees, stay hopeful, stay trusting in him, and cultivate a spirit of faith and hope.
I'll take a different angle on that question and just say, man, that grieves the heart of God. So if you're not content as a son or daughter in who he has already made you, then he's grieved by that. And he doesn't have a lot to work with. So even though the gospel brings change and pulls you forward and changes you along the way and sanctifies you, progressive sanctification, you have to be content with where you're already at to be pulled forward. And so if you're digging your heels in, resenting who God has made you, then that just grieves the heart of the Father. And so the first step would be, if that's the case, would be to be honest about that and to really see God as Father and how that breaks his heart. And then therefore, you know, cry out to him and repent, and really just begin to get comfortable in your own skin. I think about there's a prayer that I've written prayers for my kids at bedtime, because bedtime's hectic at our house. It might not be for those other people. I'm envious and jealous. I'm very envious and jealous if bedtime is super peaceful and easy at your house. Yeah. Congratulations. Teach me how. But so we've written prayers, and one of the lines in my daughter's prayer is, help me to be content with the beauty that you've already given within me, or something like that, for my daughters, because our daughters are growing up in this crazy world where there's absolutely no way they can attain the beauty that's being told that they should be. And the reason I'm praying that with my daughters is because I want them to see that their Heavenly Father approves of how beautiful they are now.
Yeah.
And if they can embrace that, then they might have a fighting chance in the culture that they're in, right?
Yeah. And so our aim then is, I mean, the only way we can be content is to see that, you say, being comfortable in our own skin, being comfortable with the fact that our goal isn't to be better us, better me, but better, not better, more like Christ. We're striving to be more like Christ, less more like ourselves, but more like Christ.
Yeah, and I think the remedy to that is just to worship Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, you got to figure out how to, if you're not content with who you are, you got to worship Christ for who he's made you. And in a sense, make yourself, you know?
Yeah, there's an interesting nuance here, Mike. You said be more like Christ, but I think actually what I'm after is to be more like the version of me that will exist in the new heavens and the new earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Bible uses Christ-likeness as shorthand for that. But the reality is, each of us is uniquely gifted, uniquely wired. We're not built the same way. And so it's sometimes helpful to just think about being the me that I will be when I'm fully sanctified, or striving for that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to be you. Right? Right. I'm not going to be you. You know, I'm going to have particular aptitudes and a particular wiring and disposition. And I don't think heaven is all of us looking exactly the same.
It'd be pretty boring.
Yeah, it's still a very beautiful diversity. And so sometimes it helps. I think you're right on, Dusty, that the gospel ought to make us embrace, because of the reality of sonship, adoption, right? God hasn't adopted me so that he can make me like you. He's adopted me as I am,
right,
because he loves me the way I am, and wants to grow me up then into the fullness of virtue and life and joy and freedom that a fully human version of me, a fully sanctified version of me would be and would have. And so that's the goal.
The more we talk about this, the more I'm just reminded that envy and jealousy are subtle sins. Because while you're talking about, what I'm reminded of is how God came and got me at my worst, right? Like I had nothing to offer. Yeah. And so how dare I say to him, this isn't good enough and I want that over there.
Yeah.
That just grieves him. And so therefore, if that has crept in, I have got to take a step back, recognize what he's already pulled me out of, and then therefore just cry out in worship. Sure, he's going to tweak some stuff along the way, but right now, man, I should cry out and say, God, I'm so thankful for where I am, who you've made me, what you've pulled me out of, and therefore I want to worship today. You know, whatever today is, here I am.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually the way out of probably envy and jealousy along the way too, and becoming more content.
Yeah, the beautiful good news of the gospel is God loves you as you are and sent his son for you. And that is the great defeater of insecurity. That's the great killer of fear and of self-doubt, is to embrace the reality that Christ has loved me. God the Father has adopted me as I am, sent his son for me, brought me into his family, and then put me into a body, a community of people, so that I can use my gifts for the building up of that body. And so he's given me to this community and each of us to this community because he wants something to be born in this community as a result of us being here. And so he doesn't want some different version of me. He has me here with the skills and gifts and abilities I have and all the weaknesses and sins and fears that I have so that this thing can look like something. And that's the gospel ought to bring just a radical, deep peace in who I am. And God's love for me that then begins to defeat envy and jealousy. And obviously this is an ongoing thing, right? It's not like listening to this podcast and embracing, the gospel, that's what the gospel is, makes me never jealous again. But it's just coming back to these truths and embracing this, the depth of this reality that is the defeater, that is the kill switch for envy and jealousy.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that the things that we talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We invite you to join the conversation by tweeting us at Coram Deo Omaha. We'll talk to you again next week on the Wednesday Conversation.
I'm still jealous of those other podcasts that are better than ours.
Hey, jealousy. Hey, jealousy.